You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Rick Vermeulen. And now, we're talking.
Hello. This is Type Radio. Now we're talking.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the All Eyes on Type conference in Rotterdam. It's May 13, 2018, and our guest is Rick Vermeulen. Welcome.
Thank you.
We're very happy that you're here, finally, because we've been stalking you for years.
At least 10 years.
So we're happy that it's finally now, the moment has come for an interview with the infamous Rick Vermeulen. The first question, you know, are you religious?
No.
Even after today's sermon?
Well, you come to think of it today. After this seminar, after this talk about underwear, but no, I'm not.
Do you have rituals?
No. No.
You're not afraid of black cats?
No, none of those, no.
You're not superstitious?
No, not at all.
Are you suspicious?
I'm suspicious, but not superstitious. No, I'm not superstitious or anything. No rituals. Or you mean like the small rituals, like getting up and having breakfast and coffee? I mean, that's not a ritual, right?
Well, it is. It can be, but normally it's just like you have a cup of coffee too.
But it's not a ritual in the way of working.
No.
That you have to do something in a certain way.
No. Not at all.
What is your first graphic memory?
That's a tough question. My first graphic memory.
Or design memory.
Design memory.
Design or type. Or
type. It might be like museum posters, I believe, or a museum in Schiedam, where I grew up. And I can't remember exactly what they looked like, but that's something that drew me to the museum, for instance.
And how did you decide to become a designer?
Actually, I wanted to become a visual artist, an artist, painter, because I thought my parents wouldn't like me to become one, so I talked them into another profession, going to art school, which was an interior designer. Because they knew some people that were interior designers and they were very successful. And being on art school, I thought the graphic design department, which was called the publicity department then, which was far more drawn to advertising, was the more fun department, where you could make really work with typefaces and photography and print and all that kind of thing, which was far more fun than painting, for instance. And that's why I decided to become like a graphic designer or a designer or sort of, or something in between the field of art and graphic design. Because my finals actually were into an advertising campaign and a conceptual art piece.
And that was in Rotterdam?
That was in Rotterdam,
in
Rotterdam. Yeah.
And what was the project?
The project?
Yeah, the final
conceptual
piece.
Project.
Yeah.
The advertising campaign were for blue jeans in the Bijenkorf.
Yeah.
And my conceptual project was a publication of three books, which were published by in an edition by Mart Spuit Publishers, on the remnants of an exhibition called Sonsbeek Buiten de Perken in 1971. So we, with a friend, we sort of found out, because the idea of this exhibition was that it was temporary. So what happens with art if it's
in Arnhem?
In Arnhem. What happens if temporary art stops? I mean, is it still art? Does it still exist as an art piece after the time being of the exhibition itself? Mm-hmm. So we all documented that and put that in three books, which were published afterwards.
And you worked on that project with someone else,
yeah.
You mentioned?
Yeah. Yeah. Paul Bonger, which was a friend on art school.
And then you were also working on a magazine at that time, the Hard Werken magazine?
No, no. A couple of years later, and I went to, did some other stuff, some freelance stuff, and I went to work for a publishing company in Bij Bakke in Amsterdam from 1975 till 1978. And then in 79 we started, we were a couple of friends, started a magazine called Hard Werken.
And how did it start? Like how were
yes,
you in
but how did that? You become, because you knew each other before the
we
magazine,
knew each other. Well, there's one thing which is very pretty important. In Rotterdam you had something which was called Rotterdam Art Foundation. Rotterdam Art Foundation at that time, because Rotterdam was bombed, Rotterdam was supposed to have no culture. Rotterdam Art Foundation became a body that sort of instigated all kind of cultural things, like film festival, poetry international festival,
events,
that was the word I was looking for. But they also had a, which was called the Lantaarnvenster, which was a building where they had a film theater, a video theater, a pop music theater, but also a graphic workshop. A graphic workshop was actually meant for artists to design and make their own posters and small catalogs and handouts and stuff. One of my friends, Willem Kars, was head of this graphic workshop, and I worked with him a lot because there was also always a concert there or a dance or something which needed a poster or needed a handout. So we did a lot of those things. I lived in Amsterdam. This was in Rotterdam. Certain point, I was befriended with people at Piet Schreuders, who did a magazine called Furore, and we looked at all these other magazines which were appearing at the time. And we thought at a certain time, we thought, listen, we have there's all these possibilities here to do a magazine, because there also was a little offset printer and a silkscreen printer. Why don't we start a magazine with all these people who come here regularly and are interested, interesting designers or artists. So that was Willem's thing. So he gathered all these people around him and started a magazine called Hard Werken, which was a magazine on, let's say, general culture.
How many copies were printed by those first?
In the beginning we printed like 3,000, 300.
Oh wow, quite a bit.
And distributed that ourselves, because that...
So you distributed around the country? So
we distributed, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everybody that was featured in that magazine were all the people that you knew?
Well, not that they were featured, no, that's another thing. So we had this like, this small group of people that were, let's say, the editors, and the main fun, great thing for us as well was that all the editors were graphic designers, except one. We had one text editor. So for us it was also like a play garden to find out how you wanted to have a magazine look like, and how you wanted an article to look like, how you wanted to give a certain idea graphic design like for a certain subject.
Did you also really set out to do a magazine that would be different from all other magazines? Because what was new, I can recall, is that the balance between like visual information and text information, they were equally important.
Yeah.
You set out to find a new way of language,
yeah,
in a way. Was that,
yeah,
by chance, or did you really set out when you talked about it beforehand?
More or less by chance, but also because we... I mean, it's also easier to look back and sort of find out that. But if I look back, you could see that all of us were sort of trying to find a new, let's say, our own graphic design language. Because, I mean, at a certain point, all of us were getting bored by total design. Or more total design followers, let's say. And say, well, okay, modernism, oh yeah, information design, information, everything should look the same. And what we wanted to do is to actually, like you mentioned, if you have an article in the magazine with a certain subject, it should look like the subject. Mm-hmm. Or should it look, should reflect the vibe, the idea of the subject itself.
And were you all on the, had the same thinking behind this? Because if you're all relatively autonomous, I can imagine you have very conflicting
Absolutely. We're very conflicting.
Yeah?
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, that was also one of the also after later, we started the studio hard working. That actually was one of the things why it worked. Because you're also like on the edge of seeing what your partner was doing, or we're discussing stuff and he was doing something else than you wanted to do. Or sort of. I remember, like, we had this joke, for instance, that if I was sort of doubting if a color for something would be blue or red, I would ask one of my partners and he would say, oh, it should be green, and I would make it purple. So that sort of, like, that sort of vibe and discussion between all of us was there constantly.
But it can also be, I mean, it can give a lot of energy, but it can also be quite, can be destructive.
Very much so, as well. So then something stopped at a certain point. We had small fights and so, but we were such good friends that that kind of, it always leveled out at a certain point, you know.
And, but from magazine to studio, when did you decide
when did that?
That
happen? So, yeah, so around the time we had this magazine, made this magazine, we all were freelancers, but we all had like the same problems, because you needed the dark, then you needed the dark room, you needed a camera, you needed the equipment, that kind of stuff. So at a certain point we rented a place where we could all continue with our freelance work. But then what happened is that some clients, well, one of them was the Rotterdam Film Festival, phoned us up and asked us if we were hard working. The studio hard working, but the studio hard working didn't exist. It was only the magazine. So that was like a bad situation, because I mean we had clients phoning us up if we were hard working. So the, if you were next to the telephone, you had the job. If you're early in the studio, next to the telephone, you picked up the job. Right? So, and then we sort of organized ourselves as a studio. So that was in 1981 or something. Which was still next to the graphic workshop, which moved as well. So we had the possibilities of a wonderful screen printer next to us, and an offset press next to us, and like a dark room, and all the offset possibilities to use and to work on even. So.
And would you consider yourself also the first collective in Rotterdam as a sort of design studio?
Yeah, I think so. There weren't that many design studios. Yeah. I mean, you had actually Proforma, and then next to that, and you had a couple of advertising studios, but you didn't have that many design studios. Maybe we were, I don't dare to say it, but I think we're actually the first collective studio, let's say.
In Rotterdam.
Rotterdam. It was hardly in anything. I mean, the reason to have something which I just mentioned, like the Art Foundation, Rotterdamse Kunststichting, was because there was hardly anything here. You had Poemas van Beuningen, you had two or three galleries, you hardly had a pop music podium. You had nothing. I mean, you had...
And if you would describe the mentality of hard working in a sentence, what was that?
We wanted to change things, of course. Young and rebellious. Yeah, we wanted to change things. We went through... the whole idea, I mean, the whole idea also, it's not only the magazine, but if you look at the work, let's say, from till we ended, which was in the early 90s, the whole idea was to give every piece its own look, its own look and feel. So one of the things, we worked for this publishing company, Bert Bakker, where we did like 100 book jackets a year. And the whole idea was like a sort of negative branding, let's say. The idea was to have every book jacket look different. Because if you looked in, and then you went to the, if you went to the, in the bookshop, and you saw something which was different, and you knew it would be from Bert Bakker. So every...
But also deliberately making sure that there's not really like a greater line in the publications. Yeah. Like every language should be built from scratch.
And we made some series at a certain point, but everything should be like a complete different book jacket. And not only the book jacket, we also thought about the other stuff. Like everything should be made to measure, which was of course a lot of work, because you don't make series, or you don't try not to repeat yourself. That's one of the things.
So his name was the only thing that was constant.
His name was the only thing.
Or you rewrote his name also in different spellings.
Oh yeah. There's one. There's only one. Actually, no. It's written in Wim Kruijl's new alphabet, with a translation in legible type underneath.
But which I come to realize now, there's much more overlapping stuff with Piet Schreuder's work in it. Although the outcome is completely different, I would say, but this whole going against the terror almost of modernism and total design, it seemed like they were writing the law.
Yeah.
This is what stuff should look like, full stop.
Yeah, which is, again, if you look back, which was very legitimate for a total design, but there was like this whole following, like people that did, let's say, bad total design work.
Second hand.
And that's what we definitely rebelled against.
But in a way, if you look back and then look at the body of hard work, it also has a way of thinking, and this way should also be this way.
Of course. Yeah. I mean that is what happens. I mean that's Because we also, one of the things we also were interested in the beginning, and it sort of also you can see that through, going further through, like say the studio work, which started in the magazine, is photography. We did a lot of like staged photography, sort of like built things and photographed those instead of like an illustration or, sort of like. Which was also in Rotterdam, was like a sort of scene of photographers which was then called the Rotterdam School of Photography, which only existed for like a couple of years, if it ever existed, which was like building little worlds, and photographed that and used them for book jackets or for a poster, like the film festival posters, but all sort of like stuff being made, let's say.
Are they still your friends, the people from the hard working group?
We see each other. I mean,
Or it's a moment in time, and do you?
It's a moment in time where we sort of everybody went to do their own things, and that did also is like that didn't clash, let's say. Didn't clash in.
Yeah, there's not a dramatic moment.
Well, I mean, the hard work merged with another studio, and then Geert and I left and started to do our own things. And that.
But did you miss working? Because you work more now. I mean, you work with.
I miss that a lot. Yeah. But also, I mean, at a certain point. But then. Before now, then I'm sort of hesitating because otherwise it might become complicated. But try to explain it. We had like a lot of work. We had a lot of work, but we had a lot of very bad paying work. Mm-hmm. So at a certain point, we needed like a financial partner or something, and we had too many people working for us. So there was. That was in the early 90s. So there were actually two possibilities, like finding a financial partner, which I thought was not such a good idea, because I mean, that definitely would create a clash between two worlds, because there wasn't like a studio like us, let's say, and if there was, they would clash as well, definitely. Or sort of downsize. So like, we have like Gerard, Tom, Geert Hadders, Tom van der Haswa and me, the three designers, and Willem Kaars, the organizer, with, for instance, one assistant, or it's like five people, six people, eight people, like a small studio, and then continue with it.
How many were you at the time, when you say we were a very big studio, so how many?
We were 20, 25.
Okay.
With interns, though, as well. But I mean, the organization became too heavy, or and financially too heavy, and so. So I thought, but also you have to look at the time, because now, let's say the last 15, 20 years, there are clients who know what design means and what design can do for them, or they're organized. But when we started, for instance, like dance companies or film festival or theater companies we worked for, they also just started. And they didn't, I mean, we did a poster for a dance company because the head choreographer wanted a poster, and not, like you have now, like the administration, the office of a dance company who says, we're going to work with the market. Yeah, and they say, oh, we want a poster, or we want not a poster, we want a website, or we want this and that. How are we going to put that into the world? And that was not the case at that time, because a lot of people were also just starting. So that's why we have so much work, but also so much bad paying workers. Mm-hmm. I mean, people didn't even think that a poster would cost money.
Yeah.
Or printing would cost money. Or a designer would cost money.
Although I can imagine that printing would be less difficult to explain, because
but a designer
I mean,
it's fun.
Yeah. It's your hobby, right?
It's your hobby.
But how did that decision come
that's a complicated story. I don't think that's a long story.
It's another long story.
So
then the decision was to...
Well, to split up, actually, because Geert also became, for a short time, head of the graphic design department at Jan van Eyck. I moved to Los Angeles for 2 years, because Henk Ilenga, who was the hard work in LA desk, which we never worked with, but I mean, it was good to have. He moved to Netherlands with his family, and I moved there for 2 years to just to think.
So the move to LA was not to leave behind the hard work history for you and
tiny bit.
But it must have been a big relief also, in a way. Like if you're in, there's a lot of tension, I think, when you come to have to make decisions.
Well, then, I mean, Geert always says that, I mean, the hard work actually stopped being in the late 80s, let's say 88 or something, and then you sort of see that we're, let's say, getting bigger or doing other stuff, or people, where all the designers went to have their own clients within the company, and actually stopped being in 1994 officially, but I think it stopped earlier. Yeah. And it was sort of a big relief to sort of move to LA. Worked with a group called Reverb. I rented studio space with them and worked with them, just to find out if that was a place to be.
Mm-hmm. Was it?
It was for a while. Yeah. No, it's also very difficult to start on your own at a certain age. I mean, I was 44, and so you actually find out that you, in those 44 years, you built so much friendships and relations in the Netherlands that I was going to miss it as well.
But LA has also a sort of, I don't know, a Rotterdam vibe to it. It's not a...
That's what I always think. Like, I mean, yeah. I think my American friends always from LA rather come to Rotterdam, and San Francisco rather go to Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throughout the years.
The equivalence, yeah, you could say. Although this morning when I entered Rotterdam, it really reminded me of like Houston and Dallas and Detroit.
Yeah, more so. Yeah,
it's more so like a Midwestern kind of city.
It's not so much physically.
No, but it's a divide. It's like the thinking or how people. Donald, you're right. I mean, city where you approach one of those cities, but Los Angeles has. And I find it hard to describe, but it has, because it's not industrial, it's not a, how would you describe it?
It's just not it's established, but it's still being formed.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. And
There is a sort of feeling of movement.
Yeah. Still.
Still. that Rotterdam also, yeah, there's still things moving and changing and developing within the city.
And it takes, it seems like it takes more, it takes effort as well to do something in LA.
Yeah.
And that's something, I mean, you don't want to take too much effort, but it's something which is needed here as well, I always think. Not anymore, because I mean, there's so many designers. And if you look at it, I mean, if you look at today, like these people, they're only interested in type, yeah, sort of thing. It's like, I mean, this was unthinkable to have people interested, mm-hmm, in type like 30 years ago when we started. Like, type? What's type? What is type actually?
And on the projects you're working on today and now, the mindset of always doing something different.
What I do now?
Yeah.
Well, I try to, but I mean, it's everything has changed completely, of course. I mean, there's so many possibilities in this. I always try to give it a twist, the work that I do. Always give it a twist, but it's not, I mean, it's not that possible as for me then, as it used to be, which is sort of normal, I think.
But do you think, is it still possible to have a hard working, a mentality of hard working now?
I ask myself the same question often, because I mean, it's easier when there's nothing, hardly anything, and there's like one, like modernism, sort of an umbrella of modernism, and then hardly anything, to rebel and find out and dive into design history and see what's happening in other countries, then now where there's everything. There's like 200 studios in Rotterdam, let's say, and 200 studios doing all kind of stuff and all kind of different stuff. And how can you rebel against that? I mean, you can go back in history and start doing modernism again, which people do, which is just a trend again,
yeah,
and it becomes a trend.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about trends; we're talking about actual development and belief. So then, I thought you were going to ask this question about what the future of graphic design can be if I see young people, young designers, being the future, but I find it very hard I see a lot of stuff, interesting stuff happening, but I don't see, like, you don't have, I mean, you, both of you, you interviewed a lot of them, you used to have design heroes, like Tibor Coleman, or who changed the world, or Neville Brody, who changed the world, and a couple of those. But they don't exist anymore. I mean, they exist, but those heroes don't exist anymore. Also not for students. When I ask my students here in the Willem de Koning Academy for their, what they like, they come with an obscure designer from Japan, or from two obscure designers from, which I never heard of, from South America and Iceland or something, which is okay, but it looks like it's happening in niches, mm-hmm, everywhere.
And but it's also because the media has democratized.
Absolutely,
these,
yeah.
I mean, 20 years ago, you had one book which showed you 50 designers.
Yeah.
Now you see a million people every day.
So I'm actually very curious what is going to happen? Will it be
the symposium that we had when the Hard Werken book came out, and there was at the Willem de Koning was a symposium, and there were different points of view about the book. The topic was really like the DIY, the do-it-yourself,
yeah,
mentality,
yeah, yeah,
which seemed to me at that moment the only thing that's left of the essence of what Hard Werken was,
yeah,
and really the lacking of a common enemy, you could say, yeah, like modernism,
yeah,
that's not possible anymore because,
yeah,
it's so fractured and,
yeah,
so spread out. But what did become easier is, like, you can do it yourself. You can,
yeah,
find your audience.
Yeah.
You can go on YouTube, Facebook, whatever,
yeah,
platform you need, and find people who really like it. And they can live on the other side of the world. It doesn't,
yeah,
matter anymore.
Yeah.
But that's probably the only thing that's really overlapping and really can be exported from that that time into now. But for the rest is like styles and.
I mean, any style is possible. That's I find it also fascinating that that's possible. So you can, I mean, psychedelics or modernism, or the combination of psychedelics and modernism, or I mean, everything is possible. And some of that stuff can be really exciting as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the mix of our design history, let's say, that's a fascinating thing as well. I mean.
Yeah, it is, in a way, it's also very liberating to not be weighed down by design history or art history, and just you can pick anything. You just put it together, and it doesn't matter.
A remix.
While we attach, because we've seen it before, you sort of attach values to it that these kids just simply don't have.
But it's the same with music, right?
It's the same with music.
No, I mean there is, but there's still new bands and new heroes in music.
No. Yeah, but
and they may sound like something you've heard like
exactly.
Times before.
No,
but
one of my
care.
Friends my age always says it's not getting any better. I mean,
it sounds like The Kinks. It sounds like Loving Spoonful. You know, whatever.
But sometimes, it's one of the things he always said, when we talk about music, is that, let's say, the Kinks or the Loving Spoonful or those guys, they rehearsed a song like 1,000 times. Or they had an idea what a song should sound like. And, I mean, now there's a lot of bands that sort of look into what happened in the 70s and the 80s, and they sort of mimic the sound, but they hardly rehearse that song like 1,000 times, that it becomes like a natural thing or something. And maybe that's with design as well, that you sort of has to become like a natural thing as well, a natural thought. Do it yourself, I think that's what you just mentioned, is one of the things that's...
But I always question that you can master the craft, but you creatively become better. Like you practice it. It's perfect. Are you a better designer at 80 than you were at 25?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you also can get stuck. You mean that like some design education programs are going that far into design history that nobody dares to do anything anymore because it's, I mean, this line has been drawn in May 1938 already. So I can't do that. It's already done.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Because you can sort of get stifled, stuck in. Yeah. So it depends. And maybe that depends as well on the designer or student or something.
On the other hand, the choices you make are much more deliberate over the years because you gain experience and you gain. So, I mean, the design choices, you make them much faster. 10 years or 20 years before, you would look more and, you know, search more and research more. So that's like the other side of it.
Do you also mean that we should research more?
I
see that for myself. I now and then see that also as a problem.
Yeah.
Let's say, so you go there,
and then,
of course, I don't have the time, I know that, blah, 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 blah. And actually, I think now and then I should sit back and for a couple of days and do some research. And
it's not research.
No, it's not research, it's thinking or sketching or idea development or...
A shortcut is great, of course. I mean, you have a limited amount of time, you make decisions that you don't need, but an accident is also great.
Yeah.
And seeing something completely different. Of course, if you want to go from A to B, it helps not going to every single other letter, but the discovery then is...
No, that was fun in the lecture that Florian gave on the Willem de Koning Academy. He had this text slide, which was very well composed, supposed to be very well, and that accidentally was falling apart. So he had all these words over the screen, which was actually better.
Yeah.
But also in his lecture about hard work, because it sort of fitted hard work in. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, because not everybody knows. There's a book that recently came out. Who took the initiative to make a book about Hardwerken now?
The the idea to make a book of artwork existed earlier, but now it was, the initiative was done, Rotterdam Art Books, Rotterdam Art, sorry, I don't know that again. And this, one of the people, there's two people sitting in that committee. There's one is Rens Muis of 75B, who wanted to make a book, or 75B wanted to make a book on artwork and or for years already. And Patricia van Ulsen, who did this wonderful book, Thinking About a Metropole, Rotterdam in the year, in the 70s and the 80s. I forgot the title, but anyway. And then they went to Verlies Publishers, who was very enthusiastic too, so. Who live in England. Ian is teaching at the London School of Communication. And he was enthusiastic and he got a sabbatical to do so. And that's how it came to be. So the initiative was by Rotterdam, it's in the book, I can't remember, Rotterdam Art Book.
So it was none of the, it wasn't the initiative of the artwork?
No. We thought about that years before that, yeah. But I thought of having us doing it ourselves would be total impossibility. So and that's sort of strange thing, of course. I mean, we worked as like a body of designers, very different designers on a magazine, but if it would become something about ourselves, we would, I don't think it would ever, ever come off the ground.
And is it true you only saw it once it was off the press?
No, only, I mean, the only thing which I saw is because, you have like the written parts with pictures in it, and you have like a picture, like a couple of picture parts. And I saw the picture parts because of the captions. Mm-hmm. That's what I saw. But I, as a book, we never saw it before, and for none of us, which was pretty exciting as well. Yeah, you can imagine. Yeah.
Have you read it now, back to back?
Not yet. I mean, sort of go through snippets of it.
So yeah.
Not yet completely, but I have to do it. Did you read it?
No.
Did you read it?
No, I looked at the pictures. But it was due. It was a highly anticipated book. There are so many people who said, well, it's about time there was a book on hard worker. Yeah. Does that give you joy that you...
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, and how could it not be?
Yeah.
How could it not?
And the evening when you
And the evening was like a big party where I hardly saw anyone.
Yeah.
As you can imagine. So.
It's like a wedding, but you don't
know. Yeah.
Everybody's there, but you didn't talk
to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, that was great. So now I have to see if it sells.
Well, I bought a copy. You bought a copy.
I got it.
Oh, he got a copy.
Yeah. I got a copy.
Well, you sold one, just to make sure. Yeah.
But now there's also a do in London, I saw.
There's a
presentation.
Well, there's like a small symposium. Because Ian, who wrote it, what I just mentioned, he received a sabbatical. And usually, I don't know if this is the case for him now, usually in a sabbatical as a teacher you have to do something as well, like write a book or do a project, or and there will be a small symposium in the London School of Uncommon.
Are you going?
No, I cannot. I wish, because it's next week already and I have this thing, this deadline.
So what are you working on? This is
I'm not going to tell you.
You're not going to tell
it's
us.
Secret.
It's secret so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you know what it is? No.
That would be good.
That's, I'm working that's, on that's, something, that's, but that's, I have that's, no that's idea
still
what
figuring
it is.
It out.
That's something where as designers we're all waiting for. Such a commission. Right? Yeah. I'm working on something, but I don't know what it is. And then it becomes big.
Exactly.
And you don't have a deadline.
You don't.
Okay. Last question.
Yeah.
How would you like to be remembered?
That's a horrible question.
Well, some people like it.
Do I have to answer that? Do I have to answer that?
No, whatever you don't have you to want. Do anything.
I find that too difficult.
That's an answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Skype Radio. Now we're talking.